You're tuned in to KTOO's Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. My final guest today is Heather Birch. Hello, Heather.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for being on the show with me today. You are here representing UAS. Would you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Absolutely. Grishtish Takat Yohan, Ida Yochato Sakka, Heather Bird, Yochato Sakta, Ganachtedi, Aya, Yesna Chatsiti, Mohawk Dachan, Aya Chat, Jiskat Kwandach, Ka Juno Dachsu. My Tlingit name is Ida, my English name is Heather Bird, and I am the new Yuchatangi Dei, our language pathway program coordinator at the University of Alaska Southeast and an adjunct faculty member for Tlingit at UAS as well.
That sounds really interesting, and thank you for that introduction. Would you tell me some more about your program, our language pathway?
Yeah, so it's a relatively new program in partnership with the Alaska Heritage Institute that's fully funding 18 language scholars of Haida, Tsimshian, as well as Tlingit to work on language learning for their heritage language with the ultimate goal of earning a language teaching certificate, which the University of Alaska Southeast is currently working on creating.
And have you been a Tlingit speaker your whole life?
No, I'm actually ancestrally Mohawk from upstate New York and moved quite a bit, but I received my bachelor's in liberal arts in Alaska Native Languages and Studies here at UAS and then left in 2015 to get my master's in linguistics at the University of British Columbia, and I'm now currently working on my PhD in linguistic anthropology focused on language revitalization. So I've been learning Tlingit since about 2010 and was adopted into the Ganachtedi clan by Goneoti Marsha Hotch out of Klekwan, Alaska.
Yake. Tell me about some of the classes that you have taught in the past and will be teaching in the future.
Yeah, so currently at UAS, I'm teaching beginning Tlingit, which is Tlingit 105 from Mondays and Wednesdays, 5:30 to 7:30. It's all online due to COVID-19. Most, if not all, of the language courses that UAS is currently offering have at least a distance component. Many are entirely online this semester. And so, yeah, I'm teaching beginning Tlingit. I'm also teaching, or I'm co-teaching a language revitalization course also at UAS with Andrea DeWeis, the humanities chair, and also a Spanish instructor. And we'll be teaching that course to sort of go through language revitalization methodologies, some history, background on what language revitalization is, what communities have done and have been successful doing, and then ways we can implement those successful methods here in Southeast Alaska. And so many of the scholars through the Hayukatangi Day program will be participating in those classes, and that class will likely also be part of the upcoming certificate that we hope to create. And then prior to that, I've taught community classes. I've done a lot of work in the Yukon, and I'm just really happy to be back here in Juneau, connecting with the family that's been so gracious to me up till this point, and really supporting language learning here in Southeast Alaska through UAS.
It sounds like Juneau is lucky to have you. Well, I know this school year is going to look pretty different compared to maybe last year or past years. Do you have much experience teaching online? Do you see any advantages to it?
I mean, I definitely have seen an uptake in interest from students who weren't traditionally students of the university. So a lot of people are taking the opportunity to take these classes because they are online. So we're actually getting a lot of interest from people down south in the lower 48. We're getting interest from people in Canada who are really interested in just connecting with these language learning opportunities. I know for me personally, all of my language learning experiences have been in person. And so it's been a real transition for me to rethink how am I going to build a community and cohort of students in an online environment. And I know there's going to be challenges with that. I know that there are a lot of students who really who want to participate in classes, but I know bandwidth is going to be an issue, especially in these smaller communities where internet isn't great on a good day. But I do think that there are some opportunities for people to connect in a way that maybe they haven't been able to before. And I'm just really excited to be able to sort of bring in people who have always maybe had an interest in learning, but for whatever reason couldn't participate because of where they were located. Hopefully now with more of these classes being online, that'll be more of an option for folks to connect that way.
How do you normally, or how would you normally structure your classes? I was wondering if you could give us some examples of teaching techniques that you found to be most useful for language learners.
So it really depends on the class itself, right? So the university classes, just being prepared for students who are coming from very different learning backgrounds and trying to make it fun. I know language learning can be a real challenge, and it's really exercising parts of your brain and parts of your mouth that you don't normally exercise. And so it can be a really daunting experience, and just trying to make it as safe and fun and, community building as possible. Usually like in a in-person environment, you know, we do small group activities and we try and stay in the language, and there's a lot that we can replicate in an online environment as well. But there's something about just being together, doing a very hard thing, but a very important thing. And a lot of emotions come up with that. And I know it's going to be, I think, more challenging to sort of support and connect some students that are going to need that extra support, but are going to find it more challenging to find that through online avenues. But I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful. And I think that, if anything, that's the most useful teaching technique I found, is just being really open and honest and hopeful about creating more speakers for these languages.
So are you ready for classes to begin? I think it's August 24th is when it starts. Is that right?
Yeah. So first day of classes are August 24th. Am I ready? Yes and no. So I am definitely ready to start connecting with students and seeing virtual faces. As far as getting class, activities and stuff together, I'm sort of scrambling. I've got sort of two positions that I'm balancing, this administrative position where I'm advising students to take certain classes and start building the certificate program, and then on the other hand, my adjunct faculty position of trying to get my own classes set up and ready. And so it's been a challenge. August is a very busy time. If anybody's worked or are students through the university, August can be a daunting time, but I'm very hopeful that come start of classes, things will sort of just settle into a routine.
I'm certain that they will. I've asked you a lot of questions about yourself and about your classes and your teaching style and how this year is different and how you're preparing. Is there anything in particular that you wanted to share with some of our listeners today about your program, about the upcoming year, or any other projects you have going on at UAS?
Yeah, I mean, really, I just want to reach out to, anybody who has at all ever thought about taking a language class. Like, now is definitely the time. There's a bunch of different options for registration, as far as you can take it for credit or take it as a non-credit class if you're just interested and don't need that academic credit necessarily. There's scholarships and tuition waivers for certain individuals who qualify for them as far as taking language classes. And so just reaching out to anybody who lives in Southeast Alaska who's interested, Alaska Native, non-Native, we're all part of this land. We connect, I think, very strongly. And part of the goal of UAS is to build strong and sustainable programs. And this certificate, this teaching certificate, will just be one sort of stepping stone in that direction. The more students we can get involved and the more interest we can have in these classes, language classes and language teaching classes, the stronger, you know, our programs will be. I know that COVID and the talks of university restructuring, I mean, they're all very scary and make things very uncertain. But the languages of this place have been here for tens of thousands of years. And so if there is one certainty, it is that these languages are going to be here and we're going to keep learning them. And so I just invite anybody who's ever even entertain the idea of learning to get a hold of me, get a hold of someone at UAS, and just really take this potential opportunity to connect if you're able to do so.
That's very well said. I also wanted to ask you about your PhD, which you're in the process of completing. Would you tell us a little bit more about what you're studying and if your dissertation has begun, what it'll be focused on?
Yeah, of course. So I'm getting my PhD in linguistic anthropology, which is hopefully meant to sort of encapsulate what's happening in language revitalization movements in Tlingit in particular, what we're doing that's been successful, and then also taking like a really hard look at how academic institutions are a part of that movement. And so looking at what the university that I'm getting my PhD from, so UBC, is doing. There's been, I think, a shift in academic institutions and their approach to Indigenous communities in the last 10, 20 years or so. And this, at least on paper, commitment to supporting language revitalization and decolonialism. And so part of my dissertation is really looking at what actually does that look like in a language learning and language revitalization context. So what sort of partnerships are being built between communities or not, what sort of research is being done in communities or not, and how much do the Indigenous peoples of those communities really have a say in those practices. And so as part of my dissertation research, yeah, I'm looking at that. And then I'm also just looking at, again, what has been successful in language revitalization in general, and how can we create speakers for Tlingit, and ideally have that sort of be a document for other academic institutions and other potentially Indigenous communities that are looking at building partnerships with the academy and with language learners, to just support each other in these different sort of methods and way of thinking about language. And so I have not started that research yet. I'm currently in what's called the comprehensive exam mode, where I'm putting together my research proposal, getting feedback from my advising committee, and then also from the Tlingit community that's been mentoring me. And then once I've presented that to the university and defended that research proposal, then I'll be sort of off into the research phase of my dissertation work. Obviously, with COVID, the in-person aspects of that meeting in some of these smaller communities are on hold. But it's also been a good chance to sort of reflect on what I can do from home while being safe and keeping our elders safe, and what really does need to be in person and at that in-person personal level.
I was wondering if you could speak more about the importance of Indigenous students having access to universities, academia, programs, departments such as anthropology, and also the importance of having faculty and advisors in departments such as anthropology who are Indigenous.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, I want to say, fairly well-established knowledge that departments like anthropology and linguistics were sort of built on top of Indigenous communities, in the sense that there was a lot of taking from Indigenous communities and anthropologists and linguists, and to a certain extent, some Indigenous studies programs. So that Indigenous people have always been a part of these academic institutions. It's just the way in which they were a part of them that's rightly being challenged. And so I think maintaining access in a way that's not harmful is a current conversation that I know a lot of academic departments are going through, and I know universities at large are going through, is how to recruit Indigenous students, but then also how to keep them in a way that is meaningful for them and is meaningful for their communities, and isn't just insisting that they operate in this one certain sphere of thought under this one certain philosophy. And I know that's been a real challenge. I mean, if you look at our university system, we've lost quite a number of Indigenous faculty in the last couple of years. And I know the UA system has said hiring Indigenous faculty is important, but I do think we need to look at why it is that they have been so affected by this current economic downturn and this current political climate that we're in. And why is it that we're not able to retain the faculty that we did have? And how can we make an environment so faculty are reflecting the student population and the state population? And so I think there are a lot of conversations that need to happen around that particular issue. And I think starts of those conversations have to be based on mutual trust and understanding of the problem at large. And I think some institutions and some members of those institutions might be more ready to do that than others. But I think as a whole, we're seeing Indigenous students participate in higher education in much larger numbers. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that more Indigenous faculty are being hired in some places. And so if we're not maintaining those faculty here, I think one way of ensuring that we're supporting our Indigenous student population is looking at the faculty themselves and the staff makeup of the university.
Ganeshish, I appreciate your comments on that and your perspective. Heather Birch, thank you so much for speaking with me today. Is there anything else that you want to share before we say goodbye?
No, just Athleen, Ganeshish, the Kut Yuhan. It's great to talk to you. It's great. Thank you for listening to me. And I look forward to a good semester, a good language learning semester. So if anybody wants to join us, doors are open.
Ganeshish, Heather, and have a great first term, or fall term, I should say.
Ganeshish.
Take care. Have a great weekend as well. Bye-bye.